Thank you for joining us this Christmas season on The Mormon Channel, as we present programs to inspire, instruct, and illustrate the spirit of Christmas. This is Stories from First Presidency Christmas Devotionals, Gift Package 7. The following stories were given by members of the First Presidency during various church-wide broadcasts of their annual Christmas devotional. Each has a message that can enrich our lives and lift our spirit during this special season. We begin with a story told by President Thomas S. Monson at the 2004 Christmas Devotional. This wartime story illustrates how the Christmas spirit can transcend worldly concerns.
To catch the real meaning of the spirit of Christmas, we need only drop the last syllable, and it becomes the spirit of Christ. We remember that first Christmas day, a day which was foretold by prophets of old. Recall with me the words of Isaiah. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Again, Isaiah declared, for unto us a child is born, and his name shall be called the Prince of Peace. With the birth of the babe in Bethlehem, there emerged a great endowment, a power stronger than weapons, a wealth more lasting than the coins of Caesar. The child was to be the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the promised Messiah, even Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Born in a stable, cradled in a manger, he came forth from heaven to live on earth as mortal man and to establish the kingdom of God. His glorious gospel reshaped the thinking of the world. At this blessed season of the year, as we follow in the Savior's footsteps, we too will have an opportunity to bless the lives of others. Lee W. Malloy was the recipient of such a blessing. A few years ago, he wrote about a time when, for a brief moment during World War II, strife ceased and peace prevailed. It was a special Christmas in his life, which took place when he served as a United States Merchant Marine. On Christmas Eve in 1944, Lee was on a ship traveling from the Mediterranean, approaching the Straits of Gibraltar, on his way to the North Atlantic. Following months, even years of service in the war, the men on board were happily bound for the east coast of the United States and home. It was a stormy night, and Lee was once again on watch at the bow of the ship. The sea was covered in white caps, making it almost impossible to see the white plume that flows behind a submarine's periscope when it is very close to the surface. Understandably, the men on board the ship were thinking of home and of Christmas and of hopes of soon being with their families. The past few days had been unremarkable, and the sights, sounds, and smell of the ocean lulled Lee into a sense of well-being. The events which transpired next seemed to happen in an instant. Lee saw the plume of a periscope appear off the port side of the ship. He knew that it couldn't be more than 100 yards away. Others on board had seen the plume, for the ship was suddenly alive with alarms and shouts of men scurrying to their battle stations. There was no time to ready themselves for a fight or to protect themselves in any way. The submarine was already on them, rising up out of that choppy sea. The enemy had them without question. They awaited their doom. Lee reported that he would never forget what happened next. There was a flashing light from the submarine. Dash, dash, dot, dot, dash, dot. He mouthed the letters as he saw the German submarine blinking its Morse code message. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. M-E-R. Could he be reading it correctly? another R, and then dash, dot, dash, dash, a Y. The second word was rapidly flashed to them in the darkness. C-H-R-I-S-T-M-A-S. Then it was over. Just as quickly as the U-boat had appeared, it sank back into the blackness of the sea and was gone. They all stood transfixed. No one moved for several seconds as they recovered from their shock, their surprise. They had escaped death several months earlier by a twist of fate, or perhaps even luck. But on Christmas Eve, 1944, they had been given a precious gift. As the reality of what had just transpired and the words Merry Christmas took hold in their minds and in their hearts, they unitedly sent up a cheer of relief and of joy and of true celebration. I'm happy to note that Lee Malloy and some of his family members are seated here in the conference center this evening. Last week when I spoke with him, he said that he has had many wonderful Christmases since that Christmas Eve in 1944. Following the war, he married and was able to spend 56 years with his lovely wife before she passed away. Together, they raised three children. Successive Christmases for Lee have been filled with not only children, but also with grandchildren and now great-grandchildren. As he has said, none of this would have been possible if it hadn't been for that fortuitous night when a ship full of men were given the gift of peace and one of their best Christmas memories possible. The spirit of love had prevailed, the spirit of Christmas, the spirit of Christ.
The true meaning of Christmas can bring a spirit of love and peace and be manifest in miraculous ways. In the 2008 Christmas devotional, President Thomas S. Monson shared another story about the Christmas spirit and how it motivated a group of young girls to give service and brighten someone else's holiday.
Many years ago, as Christmas approached, a teacher of 16-year-old Laurel girls arranged a class appointment with a widow named Jane. In preparation, the girls baked cookies and purchased a Christmas tree and ornaments which they would decorate in this dear woman's apartment. They selected gifts they felt she would appreciate. The teacher suggested a beautiful corsage, which she knew would brighten the soul of the special widow they planned to visit. On the appointed day, the young ladies and their teacher made their way up the never-ending flights of stairs. The cheapest rooms were on the top floor, which led to Jane's apartment. As she opened the door, she greeted the young visitors warmly and made them welcome. Their smiles reflected the goodness of their hearts as the young ladies positioned the Christmas tree and placed on it the decorations they had so carefully selected. Then the packaged gifts were placed beneath its outstretched branches. I know all this because I was there. After cookies were served, the girls asked Jane to share with them some of her life's precious memories. They sat in rapt attention as she told of her girlhood in far-off Scotland and how she had heard the missionaries and embraced the gospel. She talked of the ridicule she received from others when she joined the church. She spoke of the great distances she traveled to attend her Sunday meetings. By the time she told of her voyage to America and described the storm-tossed Atlantic, I noted that the girls were visibly touched. Tears brimmed in their eyes. As the evening came to an end, there were hugs and expressions of affection. And then each young lady filed silently from the doorway and made her way down the staircases to the street outside. They left behind a woman filled with gratitude for their company and for the opportunity to share a small portion of her life with them.
Perhaps these young women received far more than was given by a simple visit to a widow. Precious gifts were exchanged in both directions. In the 2004 Christmas devotional, President James E. Faust shared some special Christmas memories from his own youth.
As the years pass, special memories are often more of happenings than of things. I say this because many of my happy childhood memories occurred during the difficult economic times of the Great Depression. The extraordinary unselfishness brought out in people unforgettable concern for others. Members of families had to pool income and resources to survive. I recall one of my uncles who had a job working on the railroad used to send his uncashed paycheck to grandfather to meet the needs of the family. The difficulties of life made us rise above our selfish desires. When I came home from my mission, my Uncle Jim told me about an exceptional young lady who worked with him. This woman gave her money out of her paycheck to pay for her mother's mortgage on the home. If I had not married that special young lady, I think my Uncle Jim would have wanted to.
President Faust reminded us that special memories are often more of happenings than of things. It's not what we get, but how we give. In the 2000 Christmas devotional, President Thomas S. Monson shared a story illustrating this principle when he told of a visit to a longtime friend.
Recently, I went to an Alzheimer's care facility in Salt Lake City to visit a longtime friend, Mary Nielsen, who is 97 years of age. I was escorted by a young woman attendant to Mary's bedside. As I greeted Mary, she looked at me with glistening eyes, but did not speak a word. I said to her, "Mary, you remember when we first met?" Still, there was no answer. I continued, "It was long years ago when you were a member of the Primary General Board and accompanied Sister Monson and me to an assignment in Sydney, Australia." Without uttering a sound, Mary watched me carefully as I continued. "You will recall, Mary, that you were to stay at the home of the state primary president, Sister Beryl Lord. You learned, however, that Sister Lord was married to a non-member who was indifferent toward the church. For this reason, you were concerned about staying in Sister Lord's home and asked if you could stay at a local hotel instead. I told you I felt we should wait until we met Sister Lord and her husband and then decide where you should stay. You asked how you should act were you to stay in their home. And I told you to act as a Latter-day Saint, to be yourself, to offer the blessing on the food, and to offer your evening and morning prayers. Do you remember, Mary, that when we arrived at the airport in Sydney, Australia, the state primary president, Sister Lord, welcomed you and said, 'I hope you're going to stay at our home.' You looked at me pleadingly, Mary, obviously hoping I would suggest you stay in a hotel. However, I was impressed to suggest otherwise and told you I thought you should stay at Brother and Sister Lord's home, even though he was not a member, and meet her husband and family. I asked Sister Lord where her husband was. She pointed to the lobby of the airport, indicated that he was standing behind a pillar, out of view. We met Frank Lord, and then you departed with them to an unknown fate." I paused in my narrative. Mary Nielsen still had not spoken to me, and yet her eyes remained fixed on me. I continued speaking. "Mary, just over a year later," I said, "I returned to the Sydney stake to divide it and create the Sydney South stake. Following the conference, a man I recognized approached me with tears in his eyes. He told me he was Frank Lord, husband of the stake primary president, and that just a few months earlier, he had entered the waters of baptism and had become a member of the church. I asked him how he had gone from being one who was indifferent toward the church
to one who had become a member. "Mary," he told me, "that it was your example and your sweet spirit when you stayed in their home that had prompted him to commence his study of the gospel and to become a member of the church. He asked if I would be sure to thank you for the profound influence for good you had on him." When I returned home from attending that conference, Mary, I telephoned you and expressed to you, Brother Frank Lord's, great gratitude that you had stayed in his home and had had such a powerful effect on his life. I recall that you, too, were most grateful for the inspiration which directed that you stay with the Lord family. I continued speaking. Shortly after that, Brother Lord served as a counselor in his ward bishopric and then was called to the stake high council. Since there was no temple in Australia at that time, Brother and Sister Lord journeyed to the New Zealand temple for their endowments and sealing. Over the years, Brother Lord's testimony has remained strong. He's filled many church positions and continues active to this day. Mary Nielsen, thank you for having the truth, living the truth, and sharing the truth. I stopped speaking, and the attendant said, "President Monson, Mary doesn't know people. She's unable to recognize anyone and doesn't know who you are. I'll show you what I mean." Turning to Mary, the attendant said, "Mary, do you know who this man is?" Mary looked at the young woman and said as clear could be, "Of course, this is Brother Monson." She then turned back to me, took my hand in hers, and pressed it to her lips. The young attendant also had tears in her eyes as she looked at Mary in disbelief. Mary had remembered. Mary had spoken. The promise found in the third verse of the beautiful Christmas carol, "O little town of Bethlehem," had been fulfilled. How silently, the precious, wondrous gift is given. So God imparts to human hearts the blessings of his heaven. No ear may hear his coming, but in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him still, the dear Christ enters in.
Christmas is a time of miracles as hearts are changed and meaningful memories are developed. We hope you have enjoyed this Gift Package 7 of Stories from the First Presidency Christmas Devotionals. We also hope these stories have helped bring the true spirit of Christmas into your life. Thank you for joining us, and Merry Christmas from the Mormon Channel. You can learn more about the Mormon Channel and check other programming at radio.lds.org.